Hey, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the Darius Farooq Show. Today, I am joined by Amy Shearn, who is an author, editor, and also the writer of a Substack called Get Unstuck. So welcome to the podcast, Amy.
Oh, thank you. It's so nice to be here.
Yeah,
it's first time I've been introduced as the author of the Substack because I launched it yesterday.
Yeah, I'm laughing because we know each other and we've had these conversations many, many, many times because you, behind the scenes, were the editor of my Stoic Letter, the column that I wrote on Medium. And usually when I have people on the podcast, I maybe have spoken to them once or never before. So it's a bit different, but we know each other. So
yeah, this is just like a regular sync.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just public.
Yeah.
What's it? Do you want to go over ideas for the Stoic Letter? Whatever would be useful.
Yeah, well, I got a couple of topics that I'd love to talk to you about because obviously you have been writing for a very long time and also editing for a very long time and always found your input super helpful during the Stoic Letter run and also other articles, I think.
Back and forth.
And I was thinking about this the other day, out of the 60-something letters that you edited, I think basically all of the suggestions that you made, I basically accepted and thought about it and I found very helpful. And I just can't think of one time where I just had a different opinion, but that was just once out of all of these situations, which I think is very cool because it just shows how aligned we were. And I think that's such an important thing when you work together, you know?
What was the one time? Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, that was quite recently.
I'm sure you were right.
Yeah, no, well, there was the one about, I think, friendship. And you thought it should be two pieces. And I was like, yeah, to me, it's kind of the same topic.
That sounds like a me suggestion. What if we just solve this problem by avoiding it?
Yeah, it was a good suggestion. Good work as well. I felt like, well, it's to me, it makes sense to write about and friendship and I think being a good person or something in the same same letter. But today that's we're going to talk about you.
You were right. I mean, sure.
Yeah. So I'd love to start with a 2008 YouTube video.
Oh my God. Would you?
You probably.
I wouldn't, but fine. No. Agree to disagree.
You probably know which one I'm talking about.
I do not.
It's so funny because the title is your name and that's it. And it's from a magazine who interviewed you about your 2008 book. Was it your first book?
Yes. Yeah. It was my first book. Oh my God. Yeah. Right. It was Author Magazine.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever watched that video. It was anyway. I could give you context. I was newly pregnant and very sick. And they were like, can we come to your house and do this video? I was like, yes, of course. I'll do anything to promote my new book. And I just remember the whole time being like, don't barf. So it was a wonderful experience. I bet that video is really good.
Yeah, well, it was actually a pretty good question. The one that I had on my mind before I watched the video, which was something like, when did you find out you wanted to be a writer? And you talked about how you come from a creative family and how you kind of always knew that you wanted to write. That's true. That, like, now looking back, do you still feel the same way? Or have you kind of thought about when you decided I'm going to be a writer? Because I find it very interesting.
That is really interesting. And I did not at all. I'll recall saying that, but that's really true. I think I really always, I think as a kid, I was always creative and my parents are creative. My dad is a writer. My mom is a painter. They're both positions. And so it just seemed like a normal thing to do. And I really do remember we talk about journaling a lot. I really remember when I got my first journal, which was, I was probably 7 or so. And I believe I was bothering my dad while he was trying to write in his journal. and he was like, you know what, here's a notebook. Why don't you start a journal? I was like, great idea. And then wrote some very, you know, passionate journal entries about like how awesome my cat was and how annoying my brother was, you know, and really got hooked. I've really always been a journaler, and I now never bother my dad while he's writing in his journal, I assume, maybe subconsciously. But yeah, I'd always, of all the sort of creative things that I've been interested in doing, and I've done painting and play guitar badly and various other things, but writing is the only one I ever really got serious about. And I really always was writing. Like, I was, you know, 10 and was like, I'm super busy right now. I'm working on my novel. I can't.
Even at that age, you're like really thinking about writing a novel.
Yeah. And really making it like a priority, being like, I'm sorry, but this novel about this, that one was actually, it was in journal form. It was about a 10-year-old who lived on a farm. Yeah, like I was always, have always had a lot of.
Did you live on a farm?
Oh, no, I don't believe I'd ever been to a farm or like touched dirt with my hand.
Autobiographical.
No, it's actually, I feel like it's always really been like an escape for me. It was like, I was like, let me write about someone who's totally unlike me. Let me write about a character who's really spunky and tough and a tomboy. And, you know, it's always sort of been, because I'm mostly a fiction writer. And so it's always been a way of kind of exploring different worlds. I write nonfiction too, as you know. But that, I feel like writing essays and nonfiction pieces is more about sort of figuring out actual life on Earth. And in fiction, you can explore sort of different worlds and different people and what it would be like to sort of be in a slightly different iteration of reality. So yeah.
But
it's like, you know.
I was reading Chuck Palahniuk's book about writing. Can't recall exactly what the title is, but it's pretty good. And one of the things that I found very fascinating is that he quoted someone else, but he said someone told him or he read that the goal of writing is to I'm trying to think what exactly he said, because he said it so beautifully. I don't want to botch it, right? to describe things that are that people are unaware of, and when you describe it as a writer, then and when people say, "Oh, wow, that's so true," then that's you've done a good job, right?
Yeah, it reminded me of what you were saying. That's like, that's it. That's the ultimate goal, right? And any kind of writing, I think, I feel like you and I have talked about this with essays and short nonfiction, you know, pieces for the internet too. It's like the goal is to, right, articulate that thing that your reader maybe has felt but hasn't been able to put into words. Yeah. So then they have that wonderful experience of feeling so seen and being like, oh my God, other people feel this way, and this is a way to talk about it. Like, that's like, that's the golden ticket as a writer.
Yeah. And I usually didn't think about the same writing principles and techniques of fiction and nonfiction. But now that I'm reading Polanyi's book, I kind of see the similarities more. And right, and the concepts behind, like, good writing is good writing, and you know, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, kind of the setting is different, the goal is different, but good writing is still good writing, you know. And I think another thing that I really found useful before this turns into a summary of Chuck Palahniuk's book, I feel that there's something that you could relate to as well, is that he says that it's more important to write about real characters and how they would speak in real life instead of trying to be a writer.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And trying to communicate everything beautifully or whatever. And he That's focuses on, advice. You know, being real and genuine. And I kind of always have that impression of your essays that I've read and all the conversations that we had and also kind of your editing, et cetera. It's always focused on making it more genuine, right? And is that something that you learned or was this something you did automatic or how did that develop?
That's such a good question. I love the way that he wrote about that because I think you're right that really whatever you're writing, sort of the point is to say something very true. Even when you're writing fiction, you know, if the things that happen aren't true with the little t, they're true with the big T, you know, you want to give something to your readers. And I appreciate you saying that about my work too, because I think that is definitely something I've learned. I was really started as one of those writers who's just kind of in love with language, in love with words. And it took me a long time to think about the reader. And I think a lot of like new writers who are kind of coming from like a literary perspective and are sort of writing towards other books rather than towards actual alive readers in the world. that is sometimes not intuitive. And I really do think, just from working in digital media for so long and then having actually published novels and thinking, okay, well, who are the readers, you know? And this is something I think you're very good at that I've learned from you is thinking about what value is this to the reader? Because readers, you know, are busy. They have a lot of choices. You know, like your job as a writer first is to get really good at your craft. And that certainly can be done sort of like alone in a vacuum. And then if you want people to read it, you have to make it worth their while somehow. You know, readers have a lot of choices. The internet is really big. And even just books, there's bajillions of books, you know, published every year. And so what are the readers going to get from you? Like, what do your readers want? What can you give them? That's not something that came intuitively to me. I had to learn about that.
it's interesting to hear that you already knew that you wanted to be a writer at age 10 or 11 and basically accomplished that dream, or that goal. But what happened? Obviously we don't want to do a whole biography. but I do think it's a very big step, you know, because I think a lot of people have a goal to do something, you know, creative, whether it's to write a book or create a movie or, make music, etc. And it's very difficult to actually make that happen. Yeah. So talk a little bit about the process or the, you know, leading up to writing and publishing your first book, 2008, which at the time we didn't have, you know, the whole online stuff promoting and or even self-publishing. So that wasn't even an option. So it was truly the traditional route.
Yeah. Not to sound 1,000 years old, but it was like a different world. I mean, I didn't have any social media. I remember my publisher saying, you should get on this thing called Facebook to promote your book. I was like, okay, really? All right. And there were so many more print publications that reviewed books. And I don't know, it was just like a really different world publishing a book in 2008. But and that experience was a very traditional publication experience. It was published by, you know, one of the big five, now like big two or whatever publishers in New York. So it was like published in hardcover. It has a note on the type. I'm like, you know what? If nothing else, I got a dust jacket and a note on the type. Five-year-old me or whatever. Or not five-year-old, probably nine-year-old me would be like, wow, you really made it. Anyway, but I really did always know I wanted to write. And like, I feel like this is the story of my life and probably everyone's life. It's just been a process of like, oh, let me just fake it till I make it here. Let's just see, can I do this step? And then you know, I convinced my whoever my academic advisor was in I was about to say elementary college. That's not what it's called, undergraduate. To write, I wrote a novella as my like thesis. And so it was like, yeah, can I get away with this? Okay. And then I applied to graduate school. I was like, can I get into an MFA program? Oh, okay. I can. You know, I applied to like 15 schools or something because I knew it's hard to get into MFA programs and some of them are really small. And so I got an MFA from the University of Minnesota, which was a wonderful experience. Wrote a book that also wasn't my first published book. I think that was like my training wheels book.
So you wrote a book that never got published, you mean? Or?
Oh yeah, I've written a bunch that have never gotten published. Yeah,
but at the time, so when you were doing the master's program, so you wrote a book, and then how did you not pursue it? Was it like your own judgment? Where you finished it and read it and I was like, no, or other people saying it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that was my call. I think I knew it really was sort of a training wheels book. And I remember one of my thesis advisors told me, you know, the book you write in grad school usually isn't really your first book. It's the book that teaches you how to write a book, which of course I found horrifying because I was like, when am I ever going to have this much time and support to write again? Mm-hmm. But it's really true. Like it takes a lot of muscle memory to know how to write a book. And I think this is why a lot of people's first novels, I think, take like 10 years to write because you have to learn how to write a book. And in my case, it ended up being, it was like a book that was like a bag I'd been carrying around with me my whole life that I, you know, emptied out. I was like, well, what's all this stuff? Let's put it all in this book.
Yeah, so from all over the moment you got your journal until that time.
Right. So it was like, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 years worth of ideas. And it wasn't quite, it was kind of a, it wasn't like a marketable length. It was almost a novella, kind of short. And I think but I did also have a book of short stories or a book length manuscript of short stories coming out of the graduate program. So I had like this book's worth of short stories and this novella. And so I actually, after graduate school, moved to New York City. And this is not how things really work at all. It was like one moment in my life where I got really lucky, but I queried one agent who was somebody who I had seen him mentioned in the acknowledgments of some of like my favorite books that were written by writers who were on like their first or second book and who I really liked and respected, but they weren't like famous yet. And so I was like, okay, he's looking for new talent. Queried him and said, hey, I've got this book of short stories, which I'm sure every agent's like, oh God, a new MFA student with a book of short stories. This is awful. And he read it and he said, I like your writing. Short story collections are hard to sell. I don't want to take one on right now, but let me know when you have a novel. And for whatever reason, I was just like, okay, I have this novel idea. I'm just going to write it and then circle back with him. So then I wrote the first novel. I was in New York. I was working as an editor and I really wrote it like in the mornings before work over. I mean, it was fast. It was like a year and a half or something, but I also didn't have children. My brain was so primed in like novel writing world. And I had been sort of gathering material. So And then I did get back to him and I said, okay, I read the novel. And then he took it on, did like a little bit of editing with me, and then sent it sold on the first round to this wonderful editor at an imprint of Crown. And, you know, it was like a lovely first novel experience. There are things that now I'm like, okay, that could have gone differently. But it also, you know, it's that thing where I think a lot of writers think, oh, okay, like you said, like that's the dream, to get the book published. And then you kind of think in the back of your head, like, this is going to be it. This is going to change everything.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to. Yeah, right. Not only am I going to be rich and famous, I can just write novels for the rest of my life then. Yeah. And, you know, and then you publish your first novel and people are like, okay, cool. Publish your first novel, you know, yeah, and it doesn't.
Congratulations. And then they get on with their lives.
Yeah, exactly. I say this to students and people I'm editing all the time, and I don't know if it's possible to believe, but it really is like the biggest satisfaction in writing a novel is writing the novel. Like that's the best it gets.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's so nice to hear from readers, but that's the best part.
Yeah. It's usually when I am in book writing mode, or you know, when there's a time that I'm very intensively writing the book, that I'm working on at the time, I really remember that period of time very well. And
interesting. You know,
the music that I was listening to and when I wrote and how I felt and all that kind of stuff, because it's such a big moment in life, you know?
It's really intense. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if you have this experience, but I feel like I'm in this stage right now with this new book that I haven't even started writing. I just am sort of have the ideas for it, and it's like fomenting, and there's this stage like right before you start writing a book and right when you're in the start of it and then like in the thick of it, where it's like magic. I mean, it's almost like falling in love. I feel like we're just, the whole world seems different. Everything seems so exciting. Everything seems related to it. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe that person mentioned the color blue. The color blue's in my book. That's crazy. Like, but it's like a really wonderful sort of heightened existence. Yeah. And then you have to revise.
And then you're kind of sad when it's over, when you finish the book, because now you have to, you know, expend all this energy to get into a new project and find that flow again, right? Because that basically, even if you're not a writer, I think you could relate to this concept of, you know, flow as that great book is called by Mihaly. Csikszentmihalyi, one of my favorite books on creativity and on focus, etc. I also like how the classic motivator or inspirational speaker Tony Robbins talks about it in his TED Talk, where he that famous TED Talk. I don't know if you've seen it. So classic. But he says, or he asks the audience, can you relate to ever doing something and it went so great and you were so automatic, and then looking back and thinking, oh, did I do that? You know, like so in the flow and so in focus, and you just almost transcended above your own talent and skill or whatever. And that is, I think, a great aim to have in life, to kind of take on work or projects or anything that can get you into that flow state, because it's really, like you say, it's really the most meaningful and enjoyable thing about work, I think.
I mean, when it's really cooking, it's like I don't know, a drug or something. You're just like a little bit outside of yourself. And for me, doing creative work, right, you have that moment where you look back and say, wait, did I write this?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and there's this weird thing when you're writing fiction where sometimes your characters kind of do things you didn't expect them to do. And you're like, what is happening? Who's making this happen? I mean, I think any kind of flow state is really like worth working for. I've heard of people who find that like while exercising or running or something like that. I personally don't relate to that, but like, you know, anything that can get you there, I think is, yeah, it's totally worth it. And we get all mixed up in our heads just because, I don't know, if you know, capitalism and the world where it's like, where it's easy to sort of forget that that's actually the goal. And especially when you're sort of writing a book or something like that, and it becomes this product later that then is judged in all these various ways, and you're asked to sell it like it's a bar of soap or whatever. It's hard to, you have to switch gears, and then it's, I don't know, it's almost like you can forget that the value personally was making something and the process and the flow state, because then you do, you have to switch gears and turn it into like, hey, will you buy this enough so that I can talk about its numbers or whatever? It's very confusing.
Yeah, it's these things that we were just talking about, they might sound pretty obvious now at this stage, I assume that after your first book, or there was also a time where this wasn't really automatic, or were you never really attached to any outcomes, or did you you had the goal to write a book, but did you also have thoughts or, you know, other goals related to things that are not within your control, like many of us have? Like, you know, I used to have a lot of money related goals, like, oh, I want to make, and it's, oh, I want to make $100,000 a year, or then later I was, oh, I want to make $1 million a year, or, you know, like, oh, I want to sell 100,000 books or whatever.
Of course. And it's so insidious, because you are made to feel responsible for things you can't control. And like, I'm talking just to talk specifically about writing a book. You know, when I wrote that first book, I was really, part of it was that it was actually just a function of writing it at like 5 a.m. and being in this weird altered state. And then part of it was, you know, just having never published anything and thinking, I don't know if anyone's ever going to read this, but I know that I want to write it. And you're able to write with this sort of freedom. And I mean, that is a wild book. It really, I reread part of it recently. I was like, what? It's really kind of a wild book. And I love that about it. And I love that it was just, it's so like honest and raw. And so
for the listeners who missed the title.
The first book, it's called How Far Is the Ocean From Here? And it's a novel about a runaway surrogate mother. And it's set in the Southwest United States. And it's really a wild book.
So what did you think was wild now looking back?
Like the writing styles, I was really fearless in my writing style. And it goes in and out of the points of view of a ton of different characters who I feel like now I would be a little more worried about, like, well, I don't know, am I allowed to write from the point of view of this like teenage boy or whatever the different characters are. And it has this, like, yeah, this kind of wild, it's very high stakes. Like the characters all make crazy decisions constantly and sort of put themselves in danger in a way that, I don't know. I feel like now as a mother, I don't know that I have so much guts. I'd be like, oh, these characters need to be a little more careful. I don't know.
But it sounds like, it all sounds like pretty positive stuff. Like kind of, well, you have to be fearless, right? And be creative and all these things.
Now, rereading it, I actually just recently read the Amazon reviews of it for the first time. So it came out in 2008. And then by the time it was coming, I actually found out I was pregnant with my first child the day it came out. So I was real distracted the whole time I was like promoting this book and everything. And I never read my Amazon reviews, which I think is a good idea. No one should read their Amazon reviews. But I now enough time has passed that I did. And it was so funny. There are two reviews that basically say the exact same thing, which is like, this book is unlike anything I've ever read. It's really wild. And one of them was like a 1-star review and one of them was a 5-star review. It's like, right. They both said the same thing. It just hit them differently. Like, fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's not a middle of the road book.
Well, that's actually a really good topic to talk more about in terms of not only writing, but in terms of character and just personal things and career choices, you name it. You can never please everyone. And as a writer, I think that's one of the most important lessons that I've learned. And to me, it was actually, I don't know about how you've experienced this, but we've talked about this as well, that I do read comments and reviews as an exercise to thicken my skin and to double down even more on who I am and read maybe a 1-star review or someone who really doesn't like it and be like, oh, okay. I'm not writing for you anyway, so good luck, right? I don't care.
We've all read things that everyone else loved that we read, thought, wait, what? No, I don't. That's fine. It's okay. And not everyone has to like everything I write. I think that's a tricky thing about being for me, I was just having this conversation with a fellow writer actually about what it's like to be a writer when you're also in your life kind of a people pleaser. Like in my life, I want everyone to be happy. I don't want anyone to be mad at me. I want there to be peace. Like as a mother, I want everyone to be getting along. But in my writing, I mean, you wouldn't want that self to be writing. Like what could she write? She could write like a Sears catalog or something, you know, like what as a writer, you have to not that I'm like a controversial writer, like writing about hot button topics or anything, but just, you know, to make something that is worth anything, you make certain creative choices. And anytime you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And I think you can't please everyone in your writing. You should please some people, I guess. Maybe think of one or two readers who you're writing for. No one wants to read a writer who's like, screw all my readers, I don't care about them. A couple of people want to read those writers, you just think about your ideal reader and write towards them. And if other people don't like what you're doing and leave a nasty comment or I got a comment once on a Medium post that said, wow, I didn't know somebody could be such a good writer and be so boring. I was like, wow, that's so mean. And thank you.
So weird.
It's a weird thing to say, but also thank you, I think. And clearly I am not the writer for that person. Fine. That's okay. But it's one of those things where it's like, where you have to detach a little bit from, you know, to the question you asked earlier about the things that you kind of can't control. You know, once you put your work out into the world, like I definitely, as when I'm writing, you know, I'm focused on that piece. And then once it's out in the world, of course, I'm back to like my human being, people pleasing self, who's like, I hope everyone loves it and shares it or buys it or whatever, you know, form factor it's in. And then, you know, of course, because it is a business, then you have like your agent and editor and publishing house saying like, oh, it was a success if a lot of people bought it. Like, obviously, you get that part of it, but that's the part of bit that is the author, I don't control. And, you know, how people read something online or in a magazine. I don't, once it's out, I don't actually control that. But it gets a little confusing because as writers, we are asked to promote our own work so much and to be a part of that, which kind of makes, it kind of implies that you actually are responsible for how the book or the piece of writing performs in the world. But
yeah,
it's, you can't really make people do anything.
Yeah, that's also true. And well, this is something actually I wanted to bring up when we talk about the writing career or your path. So I went through a very different path and started out self-publishing and always had this very independent focus because there were options. And if there were no options, I think, I don't know, I probably wouldn't write.
Interesting. You know,
that's the type of person that I am. But how do you because you have your Substack now, and you have the whole experience of the whole traditional stuff, etc. How are you using all of that input to take matters more in your own hands, or at least this is kind of my perception. I don't know if you agree with. With that observation?
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, I also think you're just like much more practical than I am, which is good. I would like to like siphon some Darius practicality and like stick it in my brain somehow. Is that a course that you sell? It probably is. Like, be a human being.
Yeah, well, it's a book.
Thanks,
right.
Be a practical human. But I think that, okay, I love the idea and like the energy behind self-publishing and like the Substack, Medium, blog world, just to date myself a little bit. I mean, I came of age in the time when people were like making zines at Kinko's and, you know, photocopying their own DIY publications and passing them out at cafes and shows. And you just be like, who's this? You know, there were some that I like got in the mail from, I don't even know how I learned about them. Sassy Magazine, something. And be like, this punk rock kid in Oregon, what do they have to say? And it was like a very DIY vibe, and like the, I feel like my assumption was like all the good stuff is obviously going to come from like a self-published thing or an indie rock label or some cool weird small publisher. Like it was a real like come from a real Gen X vibe in that way. And so to me, yeah, like sort of the first iteration of blogs, which now has kind of mostly evolved into like Medium, Substack and that stuff. I love the vibe of it. And because I have both kinds of publishing in my life, it feels extra sort of special and different and weird just to write something and then hit publish and then send it to readers. I do also really value the experience of being edited, of editing. You know, I'm also right now like writing some freelance stuff for a magazine, and it's totally different process, so much slower, so many more hands in the pot. Is that a thing people say? I don't think so. More people involved, and I know that they're going to get edited to the house voice. It's not going to sound like me anymore. Fine. But they're just like two different parts of my world as a writer. I feel like I still, for novels, I still feel a little bit of like skepticism about self-publishing. And that could be wrong and like old-fashioned and lame of me. Because I think there's also a lot of problems with traditional publishing. But I do think especially with the novel, they're so hard to get right. It's super helpful. I mean, so I'm now working on my fifth novel, and I just got notes back from my agent, and her notes are so helpful and pointed out things that I did not see myself, even though I've done this a bunch of times. It's really helpful in the whole editorial process with a, especially with like something that you can't quite hold in your head yourself, you know, like a, the big scope of a novel. It's really helpful to have that. And then also you have all this other infrastructure, you know, like if you want your book to be sold in bookstores, if you want it to be possibly reviewed certain places, there still is that kind of infrastructure in place where like it has to be kind of traditionally published. Even I publish with an indie publisher now, Red Hen Press, who's like a big, small press. And even that, you know, they deal with the distribution centers that get it to bookstores and like, you know, that stuff. It is nice to have that support.
From what I understand, you really like to focus on the writing as much as you can, and when it comes to being independent, when it comes to a website or newsletter, etc., that's fine because that's still relatively simple. But if you want to do the whole process yourself and operate a website and sell everything and self-publish, that's a whole different game. And I think actually it's right, and it's very I think that requires self-awareness and also industry knowledge to make that decision, because I have seen you know, people who think to themselves, oh, I'm going to start a website, write books, create courses, do the design, do everything myself. And then they get overwhelmed. And a risk of that is that you quit and then you never, you know, continue writing or doing the thing that you came here to do. So I really like that everybody finds their own strategy, but always kind of combine it a little bit with the stuff that you can control, whether it's social media or newsletter or something that's very simple to set up, or relatively simple, I should say, set up, because, you know, if you've never done it, it still requires some learning, but it's not impossible, right? So I really like that strategy of combining it and really focusing on what do you really like, and also what am I good at. And earlier we were talking about, you were saying, well, I'm a people pleaser. Do you think that is beneficial for you working as an editor with people, or do you think it's better for you as a writer? What part of your life or your work life you think it has benefits? Because it's too obvious to say, oh yeah, well, I shouldn't be a people pleaser, but I don't think it's all bad, you know, like it often has a very negative kind of connotation to it. But
yeah, except that everybody likes to be around a people pleaser.
Yeah, exactly, right? So
but you do set boundaries, you know.
Yeah, the best thing is if other people are also considerate.
Right.
Nobody gets in bad or uncomfortable situations. So
That's right. I remember my my therapist told me, I was like, I gotta stop being such a people pleaser. And she was like, or do you have to make sure to, you know, surround yourself by people who are also considerate and who won't just take.
Yeah, exactly, like, well, right?
Sure. Yeah. That's a super good question. And I just wanted to respond to, what you said earlier about just kind of knowing what you're good at. Okay. First of all, I feel like also just in a meta sense, that was a classic Amy Darius conversation detour, which was that I'm trying to make something like philosophical and you're like, actually, it's a really practical thing. It's like, you're good at the writing part and you're not good at being an entrepreneur. You wouldn't say it that way because you're very polite, but that's such what you're saying. But I think that's really true.
More like wanting like to, you're not, right. not having that desire to self-publish, right?
Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, that's probably the real answer.
Because I think like if you can learn how to create a great book, you can also learn how to do the other stuff, which is a lot simpler. But it just takes time.
Like numbers.
It takes time. And most people just don't find it satisfying work, so.
Well, it's true. And it's like if I were awesome at the business side of it and being an entrepreneur and if I knew I was really good at talking about my book in a way, like making those connections, I think a lot of writers will say, oh, I hate the self-promotion part. And like if you opt out of it completely, that really is, I feel like, a little bit of privilege showing. It's like, oh, someone else is going to do it for you. If no one else is going to do it for you, yeah, you have to do what you can. But also, right, like I just don't think that I would have the skills I would need to self-publish in like a good way. But then what did you just say? Oh, people pleasing as a writer and editor. I think probably that comes in handy more as an editor, because when you're editing, it's usually the way I have tended to edit is like on the staff of a publication, and it is kind of collaborative. It's like you're sandwiched in between sort of your writer or freelance writer, whoever it is you're editing, and the editor in chief of the publication. And so it's a lot of like people skills. It's a lot of communicating. It's a lot of going in between. It's a lot of dealing with two really different sets of expectations. I think I always tend to naturally be like a little more on the writer's side. When a writer says like, oh, I don't want it to be edited that way, I want it to sound more like me, or this is really important to me.
Yeah.
As a writer myself, I'm like, oh, just let them have it. But sometimes that's not the deal with the publication. And as an employee, that's your job is to do your job. I do think that editing makes me a better writer and writing makes me a better editor. Like right now I'm doing a lot of independent manuscript consultations. So I'm doing some coaching, but then also reading people's finished manuscripts and giving developmental edits. And I feel like I can just see both sides. I can see the editor, I feel like I know what the book editor would say if they were at a major publishing house. And then I also, as a writer, there's certain things I get from the writer's point of view. But I think as a writer, when you're actually, if you're writing something for the internet or a publication, yes, you really need to be like using your sort of people pleasing skills to just think about, anticipate needs. And think about how you communicate. Think about what will be useful to people, how you can be useful to people. If you're like, when you're writing fiction or a novel or any sort of literary work that is, needs to reach readers in a less immediate way, I think then it helps, especially in first drafts, to turn that part off if you can and just try to be, like I was saying, I feel like I was with my first book, like a little bit.
Yeah.
Wild. I think if you're trying to write a great novel, you have to be a little bit wild. Yeah. and sometimes it's hard to get there because we're all so like polite in our everyday lives and we're used to.
That's such a good point. I really like that mindset of when you are in that mode of writing, just being raw or whatever you want to call it, I think it's only beneficial because you can edit later. And that's such a great way to look at it. I think for most things, even when it comes to starting a business, go crazy when you're thinking of ideas or whatever,
Yeah.
And don't edit yourself as you're writing.
and then later do.
Yeah, just do it later.
Then later get back to remembering that people exist. But I do think that with anything, this is going to sound corny, but I feel like it really helps to just like bring your most authentic self, because I think that's what people respond to in a piece of writing, in a podcast, in a business idea, in anything. You're going to be the best at being yourself. And that's also the thing that no one else can be. So it's like, I see that in a lot of new writers or writers who are just starting to think about publication, is they're like, well, how can I write like, I don't know if I should say this, but I got so many pitches at Forge when I was on the staff of Forge of people. I feel like just trying to be Darius, being like, how can I do a Darius? And I was like, you know what? He already does that. And he's the best at that. So why don't you, what's your thing that you have to bring? Because they can see, a writer can look at your work and see that you are very successful and have a ton of readers and really have figured out how to like connect to a certain kind of reader. And then it makes sense that they might see that and want to learn from you. That makes sense. But it's not like they can just do a watered down Darius. Like you have to be your own self. That's the thing that you're the best at. You know?
Thank you for the kind words.
Just reporting the facts.
It really means a lot. And I think that's such a good point, to not look at others and try to emulate and look more inwardly and be real and authentic. And hopefully where you can look back on your writing later on and think, oh, wow, that was wild. That's a good sign.
Right. That was me.
Yeah.
That was just me right out there.
Yeah. That's really cool. And, you know, now basically about what you're currently doing with your newsletter, Get Unstuck. I really like the title. I think it's such a relevant concept and an idea, because, you know, in modern day life, we get stuck very often, right? And I think we've talked about this quite often as well, where we were talking about these Stoic letters, where I would often write about similar topics. And you were always saying, well, you know, these topics are popular for a reason, right? Because people go through these things regularly. So how did you come up with the idea, by the way, to dedicate your, or not really, you don't want to be too limiting, but kind of have this angle for the newsletter?
You tell me. Yeah, you know, it was something I've been thinking about for a while. I feel like you and I had actually talked about this, just in terms of like talking about careers and career shapes and how sort of, I feel like you talk a lot about how everyone should kind of have like a couple different, you know, revenue streams. And I was like, I know that's right. I don't have the time to do that now, but I know that's so true. And then, because I worked in media, and this has happened to me now 3 times working for publications, you know, got laid off from my full-time job in like, you know, company downsizing, and was like, okay, you know what? Now's the time. I've been saying I was going to do this forever. Now let's just do it. And I feel like, and so that's sort of the, with the manuscript consulting, which I, you know, sort of put out a tweet and an Instagram post and said, I'm doing manuscript consulting now. Mm-hmm. Okay. And people believed me, and now I'm like booked for the next 2 months. Like I have which is great. And I love doing them. And so then I felt like for the newsletter, I wanted to be sort of like the free portion of that. Like, so, okay, if you don't have the money for it, manuscript coaching or consulting or something like that, but you feel like you might need it, or if you're not sure if you need it, or I want to sort of cultivate a community and like a place where people can talk about. I feel like it's actually a little taboo almost to talk about. Like I've had a lot of one-on-one conversations with creative people I know who are like, oh my God, I'm so stuck or I'm so blocked, but then no one wants to admit to it or talk about it, or it feels like embarrassing, or I don't know. But I think it's really real. I think it's really common. And And it's something that I think about a lot too, because I feel like a couple, maybe 4 years ago or something, I was feeling really, really stuck. And I felt I had this novel, my third novel, I was having a hard time finding a publisher for it. And I felt I was in this holding pattern. Like, I felt like it was hard to start something new while I had this sort of open loop of what's going to happen with this novel. And I just felt really, really stuck creatively, really stuck personally, really like, I don't know what my next steps are. And it just felt so awful. Like, so in a way that you can't even, it's like, I can't even remember anymore how awful it felt. I just know because I wrote it down in journals and, but it's like trying to remember a smell or something. Like, I can't really call it up anymore because I don't feel that way anymore, but I just know it was so awful and felt really like permanent, like a new state of mind. And I think I have that, I know I have that conversation with people a lot who are maybe in their 30s and 40s and 50s and who are sort of, will say like, I was really creative in college and when I was younger, I wanted to write or whatever it is, but you know, I'm working with writers. And then, you know, life happened, had to earn a living, I got married, had kids, I don't have time anymore, which is like, we all know we have time for it. You have time. But it's not about, but that's like code. It's like, you don't have the energy for it. You can't get started. You can't give yourself permission to use the time you do have for something creative for all sorts of reasons. We've all sorts of things that block us, like guilt, that voice inside of your mother or the English teacher who's mean to you and told you you were a bad writer, or the editor who said, no, this is terrible. Like, whoever that is, not me. I would never say that. You know, that voice that gets stuck in your head and is like, this is a waste of time. Why are you doing this? Who do you think you are? And so I felt like, anyway, so I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to sort of someday create something for people who are feeling this way. So I feel like I just want to write about and then have some plans in place to start some kind of online and in real life sort of like writing support groups almost that are in service of getting people unstuck, whether that's in a project that, you know, I know so many people who have that novel they've been writing for, you know, 20 years or whatever, or just in life feeling like, I need something new and I can't, I'm stuck. I don't know.
Yeah. I love how it started and how you extrapolated that, that initial service of manuscript consulting and coaching to what would this look like in a newsletter form. That's so cool to see how you work that whole process out, and you know the way that you described it. That's also how I usually think, because often people look at newsletters or books or products or anything else that they see in a finished form.
Yeah.
And they think, well, that person probably thought of that exact thing to do in the past or something, or at some point, right? Yeah. But what I usually say is that I kind of have a sense of direction and I start and then I kind of adjust until I figure out what the exact thing will be, you know?
Yeah. So I start really the day after I got laid off. I was like, okay, we're doing manuscript consulting now is what we're doing.
Yeah, by the way, that is the best response, right? If you ever, if a project ends or work ends or whatever it is, or your business fails,
dust myself off.
next day, just start something else.
Right, yeah. And so many people have, you know, you have an idea in your head of like what you would do if X, Y, Z. It's like, all right. Now's the time. And I knew I wanted to do a Substack, but I didn't, a newsletter, you know, but I didn't, I realized that because I've always worked in media, I say things like, oh, a Substack. And I was talking to a friend who was like, what's a Substack? I was like, what? Oh, it's just an email newsletter.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Right.
I'm so in it.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know,
it's like, but I couldn't turn into, Xeroxing.
Right, yeah, exactly. A Kleenex. Yeah. But what was I going to say? Oh, I was last week. I was up in the Berkshires with my kids, and I was literally floating in a lake. It was like a Forge article, honestly. And it, like, I was floating in the lake. I was mostly listening to my son talk to me about Roblox, mostly, and all, and just kind of like, it was really relaxing. And then all of a sudden, it kind of hit me. I was like, oh, I know what the newsletter should be. I know who it's for. I mean, that was the key. It's like, I think I know who it's for. And I feel like it's for people who feel restless. Like, that was the thing I was missing. It was like, I know it's about writing. I know it's about getting unstuck from a project. But like, what gives that a sense of urgency is when you feel really restless. And that's like, can be a great feeling or a really uncomfortable feeling. And I think so many times an answer is like, do the creative work that you have not been doing. But to me, I mean, it sounds so small, but to me, that was like when that clicked into place. I was like, oh, okay, now I know what this newsletter is and who it's for.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I have to say, I'm really curious to see how it goes. And I found out about it just today. and I am going to subscribe.
Just started yesterday.
Yeah. And I honestly, I already know that I can recommend it because we've worked together for so long that I, you know, I'm sure that it will be great content and helpful in you know, helping you to get unstuck. And myself, like I said, the stuff that I write about, it for me, it's also relevant. I also sometimes feel stuck, and then I fall back on some of the helpful and positive routines and reminders that help me to get going again. And that's really worth it to spend time on these types of things. So hopefully a lot of readers and people can find you and make sure that they don't get stuck for too long.
Yeah, I am shocked to hear you say you get stuck sometimes, because I feel like you're so good at like moving forward. And but we've talked about this actually, and I think I've made you write about it before, about, you know, not running out of ideas and how to like be thinking a couple steps ahead. And I feel like you're very good at that, like, yeah, how to deal with when you do get stuck so seamlessly that it seems like you're never stuck and you're always super productive and creative.
Yeah, that's what it. That's what the end goal is, or the end result is. So,
yeah,
that's really cool to hear. So, for listeners who want to subscribe, what's the best way to find the newsletter?
Yeah, that's a good question. What is it? I think it's just AmyShern@Substack. .com. Yeah, that's right. Amy, I just type it in. Amy Shern, AmyShern. Substack.
Yeah, I'll also add the URL in the description of this podcast and your Twitter as well, and your website. I saw you also have a website. So, yeah. That's
all the things.
Yeah, exactly. For me also, well, I'm not really a social media guy, but I usually refer people to my website. And
kind of there. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
How about, you ever meet writers who don't have their own websites? I'm always like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
My God, it feels like a power move, but I think maybe sometimes it's just they haven't gotten around to it yet.
Well, if you're Stephen King or, you know, if you're super famous, you're like.
He's like, find me.
That's like when people say, I don't have a phone. Who are very successful, or I don't use a calendar.
Yeah. I'm like, well, someone in your life does.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks for joining the podcast, and we'll stay
Thank
in touch.
Thank you so much. Sounds great. Thanks, Darius.